Chapter 72. Imposter. When the Shalane had read of the epic battles of the past, they always started with two armies gathered against each other on opposite sides of the field, horses stamping and footmen nervous as the leaders parleyed in the centre of the field. Parley failing, the leaders returned, and after raising a shout, two waves surged across the intervening space to mash against each other in chaotic thunder. After General Harband and Lord Kildan fought their way through one of Mikik's lesser legions at Butcher's Gap, they heard the drums of war arrayed against them again, but not the percussive thunder of the Uyumak. The combined armies of Tolnor and Ogmir now pursued them on their southward track. Lord Kildan and General Harband had pushed Mirel's forces on through the night, but the soldiers behind them matched them for speed and endurance. Spies of the Church of the One had no doubt warned Aethon and the Padres that a sizeable force marched on the floor of the canyon, and that Mirel rode in command. The Shalane could only imagine what they thought of her mother, Jen's unflinching supporter, who had, to their view, attempted to slay Eldaloth on the day of his re-emergence into Kihal. How would she and her mother ever convince them of the truth? What arguments could they possibly proffer to persuade the churchmen that the bright, shining being that now favoured them with such beneficence was indeed the force of evil that they had so long feared would wrap his crushing embrace about Kihal and destroy it? Even worse, the Shalane marvelled at how she hardly cared about what became of the world. She had failed, and neither of the dreams that had plagued her for so long had come true. The man she had married to save the world had died without a whimper. The man whose love she sacrificed to save the world had died in a valiant struggle to save her when it was worthless to do so. The world would fall, and any comfort she could have taken in Jen's affection would have faded as the deceitful Mikik destroyed them all. But oh, how she had wanted her faithful friend and protector. The young summer days brought sunshine and little shadow to the vast stretch of flat prairie that slid by her in a tear-soaked blur. The Shalane's body hurt from the birth, her head spun with weakness, and her heart felt so numb with grief that she doubted it beat at all. Her child was gone, Jen was gone, her hope was gone. Her mother rode to her side, her mask of control set aside so that sorrow could roost upon her features, and project clearly to anyone that her heart had broken. The Shalane doubted she had ever seen Cadean so pained as he rode dutifully behind, powerless against the enemy that tormented his charge. The Shalane had caught glimpses of her mother's love for Jen in the past, but now that oft-hidden text read plainly in her eyes, forced to light by the loss of one most dear. The Shalane tried to choke down her own distress, but something within her bid her to simply stop, dismount, and let the wave of soldiery knock her to the ground. The thundering hooves would pound away what miserable shred of life she could still lay claim to. At the very least, she wished they would return her to the side of Jen's quiet body so she could fade away with him into the dust. But haste had denied him even the small courtesy of a proper burial. The only honour they could bestow besides the sad volume of honest tears was to arrange his body so that he was embracing his sword as he was wont to do, only now in the grasp of eternal sleep. Lord Kildan and General Harband called for a halt, her mother working at her own hair and face in an attempt to fashion a mask of dignity. The Shalane cast her gaze over her shoulder, finding that the pursuing horde of men had also stopped about a mile away. Their metal glinted in the sunshine, the number of soldiers easily doubling the small force commanded by her mother's leaders. "It appears they wish to parley," Dacen informed her, riding close. "Do you see the emissary?" Between her veil and her tears, nothing in the distance could be seen easily, but after a few minutes a number of horsemen approaching at an easy pace resolved to her vision. Lord Kildan and a contingent of soldiers separated from their ranks and rode out to meet them. Murmurs and whispers broke out among the soldiers who, for the most part, had obediently followed them, despite not knowing the full drama of what had occurred at Echo Hold. With Jen dead, the Shalane was the only witness of Mikik's duplicity. Aldemar had shown her the face of her enemy, and that vision alone held the truth that the being masquerading as Eldaloth was a fraud. Her mother believed her implicitly, as had all those connected with her, but hopelessness welled up within her when she realized that no one else would. Who would embrace the horror of truth while the rest of the world revelled in victory? Lord Kildan returned from his parley on the plain, and the inner circle of Mirel's leadership gathered at the centre of their forces. The Shalin wanted no part of it, but her mother, somehow functioning despite her grief, helped her daughter down from the horse and brought her into the circle, where Duke Kildan, General Harband, Ethris, Maywin, and Gerund waited.
"Who commands the host?" Mirel asked, unable to mask the unsteady quiver in her voice.
"It is Padra Aethon," Lord Kildan answered. "He's got enough scars to rival Jennah."
It took Mirel looking away and wiping her eyes for Kildan to realise his blunder.
"I apologise, my lady. I express my condolences."
"What does he want?"
Ethris asked, eyeing Mirel with concern.
"At first," said Lord Kildan, "they just wanted Mirel, and anyone connected with her, to be held for interrogation and prosecution for aiding Jen. Besides trying to kill Eldaloth, or who they think is Eldaloth, they believe that Jen murdered the Shalane by tossing her off the bridge. I informed them of the truth, which brought them great relief but new demands."
"What terms?"
Mirel asked, crawling on top of her emotions.
"They want you and the Shalane to return with them to Echo Hold immediately, claiming they are under orders from Eldaloth himself. They wish for Ethris, General Harband, and me to disperse the troops immediately and submit ourselves to their custody. If we do not obey these terms, they will pursue us and take what they want by force of arms and magic."
"Did you inform them of Mikik's fraud?"
Ethris asked.
"I tried," Lord Kildan answered, "but they mocked me for even suggesting it, demanding proof and witnesses. Are we sure that the being that appeared was Mikik and not Eldaloth?"
Lord Kildan's eyes communicated his desperate desire to avoid bloodshed.
"It is Mikik," the Shalain confirmed. "With Jen gone, I am the only witness. I could open my mind to Aethon so he could see the vision Aldemar gave me, so he could know Mikik's face and voice as I do."
"If you get within eyesight of Aethon, he'll take you,"
Harband warned.
"I agree,"
Lord Kildan said.
"I can get the memory from her and share it with Aethon," Ethris suggested. "He may not believe me, but it is worth the attempt. Lord Kildan, do you think that Aethon would agree to a council if we promised to offer evidence of our claims?"
Lord Kildan thought for a moment.
"I cannot say with certainty, but I can attempt it. We must try. They claim to outnumber us 3-1, and from what I could spy from my vantage point, I believe them. If we are forced to fight, we will lose."
Mirel stood tall. "Let me be clear about one thing, and this is for all of you. I will not turn my daughter over to Padra Aethon. I would ask that if the need arises, that the forces loyal to me buy time for the Shalane to escape southward and then west to Rugoth. She must live."
"No, mother,"
the Shalane exclaimed amid the nods of assent.
"My life is not worth the blood of these men. Let me go if Aethon requires it. I would rather join Jen in death than see the blood of good men spilled to save my worthless life. I have failed, and nothing can change that. My time is over."
"Mikik wants you,"
Ethris said tenderly, taking her by the shoulders, his gaze boring through the veil.
"If you weren't important, or a threat to him, then Padra Aethon would let you go. I'm sure that in his mind he simply wishes to return you so that Mikik can usher you out of this world. But the truth is that you are the only member of the prophecy of his destruction that still exists, and you are the only hope we have."
The Shalane wrenched herself from his soft grip.
"I will not—"
"You will,"
Mirel interrupted, face severe.
"One of the best men I ever knew just sacrificed his life so you could live. You will not dishonour his memory by throwing that life away."
Her mother closed her eyes and steadied herself.
"I do not mean to burden you or be cross during this time of mourning. You know I feel this wound as deeply and as painfully as you, but do not compound it by suggesting I give away what I have treasured above all."
The Shalane nodded in acquiescence, and the council relaxed.
"It is settled, then,"
Ethris said to solidify the decision.
"Shalane, I must intrude upon your thoughts. I need your memory of Aldemar's vision and what passed between you and Mikik on the bridge of Echo Hold. Will you allow me?"
"Yes."
"Thank you, dear," he said tenderly. "Do not let pain overwhelm you. We cannot see all ends. When I am done, Mirel and Lord Kildan will accompany me to talk sense into Aethon.
There may be a way out yet. Lord Kildan, please approach Aethon again and let him know we have evidence of our claims.
The Shalane bowed her head as Ephrys placed his hand upon it, but despite his comforting words, no serious hope took root in a soil she feared too hardened by tragedy to let any seed creep in. Mirel kissed the Shalane's cheek before she mounted her horse, joining Ethrys, Kildan, Cadean, and a retinue of soldiers ready to ride toward the centre of the yawning space between the amassed armies. Aethon had agreed to hear their arguments, though Mirel doubted the conniving churchmen would take them seriously. Mostly, Mirel was grateful for Ethrys, a mage powerful enough for Aethon to respect, and a loyal friend who had generously taken up the slack in her leadership that the fog of her grief had left. She hardly had the will to command anything or anyone, having Jen's pale face and marred body cradled in her arms the only memory that mattered to her. Only the need to protect her daughter had roused her to activity, and she clung to that steadying purpose to will her mind to turn again towards strategy and negotiation. They moved at a steady pace toward a pavilion that Aethon had ordered erected in the field between the two factions. Mirel tried to understand the matter from the perspective of everyone at Echo Hold, save those few who knew the truth. The day before had proceeded just as prophecy had dictated, until Jen had stabbed the impostor Eldaloth in the back and wounded him, turning the bliss of victory into terrifying uncertainty. That Mikkik had commanded Aethon to retrieve the Shalane and her supporters meant that the Dark God had survived Jen's attack on the bridge and was in command. What terrified Mirel the most was Aethon's pride. He would take his inability to control Jen as a personal failure that had led to the wounding of his god. This task from Eldaloth would provide him a way to save face in a small way. If Ethrys's demonstration of her daughter's memory was not sufficient to convince the Padre of the true identity of the being he thought a god, there would be no way to avoid bloodshed. The noon sun shone warmly upon them as they approached the pavilion, a cadre of eunuch elderfare ringing the outside and stiffening to attention as they dismounted. Padre Aethon stood outside in his robes of office, eyeing Ethrys and Mirel as they approached. Padre Nolan stood at his side. Aethon's face and hands bore recently healed scars, but the power of his piercing eyes remained alight, filled with divine purpose. Without a word he stepped aside and signalled for them to enter. The dim tent sweltered in the afternoon heat, the ground covered with functional rugs and rough camp chairs that circled the interior space. A third padre waited inside, already seated with a quill and paper on his lap. They exchanged no greetings as they sat, Aethon staring at them all with barely checked contempt.
"Let me be clear that I allowed this parley as a courtesy," he began. "I fully intend to recover the Shalane. I was gratified to hear that Jen was slain, and will have my men search among the corpses, so that we can drag his body through the streets of Echo Hold, and then burn it. If I have my way, Mirel, you will suffer the same fate. I hope you can see where your naive trust of Jen has led us. You knew he was the Ilk, and chose to give him honour and position despite it all. Now Eldaloth bleeds with a wound that cannot be staunched. His wound has no power to take his life, but no power to be healed either. Only the Shalane can help him. She must come with us."
"Jen saved the Shalane's life, Aethon. He died at Butcher's Gap, destroying Mikkik's creatures to keep them from catching and killing her," Mirel countered.
"The Shalane was set for Erelinda before the Ilk interfered. She would now be partaking of the joy that Eldaloth gave to Shatan."
"That is not Eldaloth, Aethon," Ethrys said forcefully.
"Ah, yes," Aethon said, "the delightful story Lord Kildan warned me about. What proof could you possibly have? What circumstance could confirm it? The world now rejoices. Mikkik's creatures are in retreat as we crush them and drive them east. Eldaloth sits upon the throne in Echo Hold, rewarding the faithful and healing the sick, and you come with wild tales. Who concocted this story? Jen?"
"It is the Shalane that confirms it," Ethrys said,
"though a thoughtful consideration of the events at Echo Hold might tender its own evidences. Don't you think, Aethon, that the battle went just a little too easily? In the first two Mikkikian wars, tens and even hundreds of thousands were killed. So Mikkik returns and just throws his soldiers at Echo Hold with no plan or military purpose?
I doubt even 100 of our defenders were killed. Then Mickick crafts some creature for you to believe is him, and you all play along.
Ridiculous! Athan thundered. If you have real evidence, then let us see it. If all you have is words, then return to your soldiers and tell them it's time to die.
Mirel's doubts about Athan's willingness to negotiate became all too real, as Ethrys rose and approached the zealous man. Athan would not leave without her daughter. He had already carved his intended path, and only a confession from Mickick himself would deter him down a different road. Ethrys stopped in front of Athan.
My evidence consists of two memories I have copied from the Shalane's mind. The first is a vision given to her from Aldemar, in which he showed her Mickick when he slew Eldaloth. The second is the Shalane's encounter with Mickick on the bridge of Echo Hold just before Jen pulled her into the ravine. It is very clear to the Shalane and anyone who sees this memory that the one who killed Eldaloth hundreds of years ago stood on the bridge of Echo Hold and unmade Shatan and the Holy Child using Triss magic. You may enter my mind and view these memories. I know it is in your power.
Athan, clearly unconvinced, stood and invited Ethrys to sit in his chair so he could place his hands upon Ethrys's head and do the reading.
Do not try to wander where I do not wish it, Ethrys warned. You would regret it.
The spectators fell quiet as the two men concentrated, Athan whispering the words of his spell. For several minutes, both sat motionless as the memories gleaned from the Shalane's mind played before Athan, whose controlled facial expression revealed nothing of what he might have thought or felt. At last it was over, and Athan backed away, eyes refocusing outward as Ethrys returned to sit with Mirel. For a moment Athan actually seemed to consider seriously what he had seen, Mirel's hope rising. But his words crushed it in an instant.
You call that evidence, he said with derision. These are images from the mind of a frightened young woman whose faith Jen had poisoned from the moment he met her. And let's not forget that the memory given her was from a race of creatures whose purposes and intentions are as unknown to us as Jen's were. If you have nothing better than that to offer, then I suggest that you turn yourselves over peacefully now. I will allow Lord Kildan to return to your lines and order the soldiers to surrender their weapons. They will be free to return to their homeland, once we have reached Echo Hold with the Shalane.
See reason, Ethrys pleaded, standing. You have been hopelessly deceived.
Guards, seize them, Athan ordered, nervously eyeing Ethrys.
Wait, Mirel yelled, as the Elderfair entered the tent, weapons drawn.
Cadean shoved his way forward to stand by Mirel. She stood toe to toe with Athan.
If the Shalane goes with you, can you promise that she will come to no harm?
Ethrys said,
No, Mirel!
She silenced him with a look.
Of course, Athan exclaimed. It is you who is taking her into danger.
I only wish to do as Eldaloth wills. She will be far and away more protected in Echo Hold than riding through the wilderness where the remnants of Mickick's forces roam leaderless.
Then let me speak with my daughter, Mirel said, doing her best to act defeated. It came easily because she felt it.
I would inquire of her will and see what she wishes.
Then be quick about it, Athan said. I expect a report within the half hour.
Mirel's mind raced as they left the tent and mounted the horses, polishing every detail of the plan that was born as soon as she saw Athan's determined, implacable face.
You can't be seriously considering this, Ethrys said quietly, face questioning. But I see that you aren't. What do you propose?
Mirel waited until they were farther from the tents before she explained, signalling for Ethrys to lean in close so Cadean couldn't hear.
If Mickick uses impostors, then so can we. I will take the Shalane's place with a little help from your magic. After we have pretended to counsel together, we will send Kildan back with the deal. He will say that the Shalane has agreed to return with Athan, but only if he lets everyone else go free. If I'm right, he will agree. Getting the Shalane is everything to him, and punishing the rest of us of far less import. I will take Dacen and ride to their camp to complete the illusion. If we're lucky, he'll be so excited to get underway that he won't submit me to any close examination.
What about—
and Ethrys cast a glance back to Cadean.
You or I will have to drop him and keep him under for as long as it takes, she said. He will ruin everything if he comes chasing after me.
Aethon was serious about dragging you through the streets, Mirel. Are you sure you want to do this?
Mirel nodded. If that is what it takes to keep my daughter away from Mikik, I'll suffer it. But I think Aethon knows that if he hurts me, the Shalane would never forgive him or get anywhere near his control. I'll remind Aethon of that if it comes to it.
Aethrys nodded as they arrived at their lines to a sea of expectant faces. Taking care of Cadean would be easy, compared to convincing her daughter, but Mirel had to try. If need be, she would have Aethrys put her into a slumber, along with Cadean. Her council gathered about them, but Mirel asked for privacy, pulling her daughter away toward the rear of the camp where they could speak alone.
We've little time, daughter. I'm going to ask something very difficult of you, and I need you to be strong for me. You've decided to let me go with him after all, the Shalane said, resigned and even relieved.
Mirel took her daughter's face in her hands.
No, my love, I need you to let me go with him.
As she explained the plan to her daughter, the expected resistance came.
I cannot lose you and Jen both, not now, the Shalane exclaimed.
That is the point, Mirel countered. If you go, Aethon will have no qualms about torturing and killing me, and maybe others besides. If we refuse, his army will destroy us. If I go as an impostor, you can flee. By the time he figures out our little trick, you will be out of his reach. He cannot kill me. He knows that doing so would turn you against him forever, so he will keep me safe. In more ways than one, I will be much safer than you. The Shalane began to weep, and Mirel embraced her tenderly, knowing that her arguments had broken down the Shalane's defences. She signalled for the council to come to them and quickly explained her plan. Cadean, incensed, objected.
I will not put you within reach of that man, or—
Aethrys incanted, and Cadean fell to the ground, unconscious. Mirel regarded him softly, tears coming to her eyes.
I am sorry, old friend. You cannot follow me this time. Please see that he is treated with dignity and honour.
It will be done,
Lord Kildan assured her.
Dacen, Mirel said, are you prepared to come to Aethon's camp with me? I cannot say what he will do with you.
I am loath to leave the Shalane in this peril, he said.
Please, Dacen, the Shalane said, do this for me. If he allows you to stay with her, please do. It is the greatest gift you could give me. I would be in your debt forever.
He bowed. Then I will.
Let's hurry, Aethrys prompted. There is little time. Kildan, ride to Aethon's camp and let him know our terms. There is a small hedge just a little way off. Mirel and the Shalane will trade identities and clothes there.
They worked quickly in the heat of the summer afternoon. They had to conjure a replacement veil for the Shalane, though Mirel knew that the powerful beauty that had once exuded from the Shalane had already dimmed, the darkness around her red-streaked eyes dulling her once powerful radiance. When they were finished, she signalled Aethrys over.
You are of the same height and build, Aethrys observed, but the problem is in voice and bearing. The voice I can change. The Shalane's bearing is yours to imitate, Mirel. You are used to ruling and commanding and getting your way. Right now you need the humility, fear, and exhaustion of your daughter. I mean no offence, Shalane.
I feel those things too, Mirel said. I plan on saying little.
To her daughter she said, since you spend a great deal of time with Aethon, I will need you to inform me of any significant events that he may bring up casually, though there is no time for detail. While Aethrys incanted, the Shalane rattled off a number of meetings she had attended and conversations she had had with the Padre, but Mirel doubted they would help much. When Aethrys finished, the voice of her daughter issued from her lips, surprising her.
It will be strange, Aethrys warned her, and it will only last for about a day. If you can keep up the ruse that long, we should be far enough out of Aethon's reach.
I'll do my best.
Duke Kildan returned, galloping directly to where they waited.
He has agreed, he reported. He demands she come at once. There is a lot of activity in their lines, and I'm worried he means to attack anyway.
Let's get this over with,
Mirel said, embracing her daughter one last time.
Remember your worth, Shalane. Remember who died for you. I hope we may meet again soon, but if not, remember me for my love, whatever my mistakes have been.
Prying the reluctant Shalane away, Mirel signalled Dacen over to her and steeled herself. If she failed to convince Aethon of her identity, she had little doubt Aethon would see her run through on the spot. Aethrys hugged her, and the rest of the party bowed.
"Remember," Aethrys said, "you are your daughter. Diffident, quiet, and not prone to sharp remarks. Speak as little as possible and you'll get through."
Morel nodded, and with Dacen in tow, mounted the horse and rode away from the line of soldiers, who, unaware of the ruse, whispered among themselves about the Shalane's departure. Corse decided she allowed one last look backward at her daughter and let the grief she had held at bay finally have its just due. Ahead, Aethon waited next to a prison wagon, and as Lord Kildan had observed, the lines bustled with movement and preparations that indicated that more was at stake than just an unforced departure. Men donned armour and checked weapons, and Aethon's bearing bore the hallmarks of impatience. He bowed as they approached.
"Most holy Shalane," he intoned reverently, "I thank you for the wise decision to return to Eldaloth's embrace. I am afraid we must depart rather hastily. Some of Mikik's creatures still have the will to fight on without him. I had intended less confined accommodations for you, but I am afraid you must bear a little discomfort for your own protection as during the caravan to your wedding."
"It doesn't matter," Morel said, the Shalane's voice still feeling strange in her throat. "We are doomed no matter what we do."
Aethon furrowed his brow in concern.
"You are mistaken, Shalane. When you see Eldaloth, you will understand your error and feel of his kindness and mercy. Then you will find hope again."
Morel mounted the prison wagon and Dacen tried to follow, only to have the Elderfair guards rebuff him.
"Dacen, you are dismissed," Aethon said. "Return to your people." "I will not leave her," he exclaimed.
And Morel was impressed by the sincerity of his voice. Lord Kildan's son was quite an actor after all.
"Go, Dacen," Morel said, keeping the despair at the forefront of her voice. "You can do me no more service now. Go help my mother. Keep her safe, and you will be rewarded."
He bowed stiffly.
"Your will."
He mounted the horse and took the other by the reins, leading them away. Padre Nolan approached as the Elderfair bolted her in.
"If we are to avoid the vanguard of Mikik's host, we must leave now. We will barely make it to Echo Hold as it is."
"Is there time for the tent?" Aethon asked.
"Leave it,"
Nolan replied.
"Mikik's host?" Morel thought. "From where?"
The small contingent they had destroyed on the canyon floor was the only body of Mikik's army not attacking Echo Hold that the scouts had run across. Aethon had made it seem like Mikik's forces were scattered and leaderless, but if the army of 6,000 that had chased them south could be put to flight by whatever was coming, then something had gone wrong. Her daughter might have been safer going to Echo Hold after all. Morel peered out the bars as the wagon rumbled north, wanting to scream a warning to those she left behind. But she was just as powerless to help them as she had felt holding Jen's lifeless body to her breast. Desolate, she slumped against the sides of the carriage as the only thing left in the world she wanted to fight for disappeared beyond the horizon.